ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello and welcome to The World Today. It's Monday, the 6th of May. I'm Rachel Mealy, coming to you from the lands of the Turrbal and Yuggera people in Brisbane. Today, nursing and teaching students to be paid more than $300 a week to ease the financial burden of completing placements. And listening for blue whales. They're the biggest animal to have ever lived on this planet, but finding them in the ocean is surprisingly tricky. Scientists decided to listen rather than look.
So try to figure out where they are and whether or not they're continuing to recover after their near brush with extinction.
First today, the parents of Australian surfers Callum and Jake Robinson have made the heartbreaking journey to Mexico, where they've formally identified the bodies of their sons. Mexican police believe the brothers were shot dead during a robbery. Their friend, Jack Carter Road, an American, was also killed. The murders have triggered protests in the city of Ensenada. Locals claim the crime rate is out of control and drug cartels aren't properly policed because of corruption. Alison Shaw reports.
In the city of Ensenada in northwest Mexico, hundreds of protesters are showing their support for three tourists who came to enjoy the local surf but disappeared. They hold surfboards inscribed with messages in Spanish, like, Australia, we are with you. Others read, beaches, security, freedom and peace. And they just wanted to surf.
It's not good for us as surfers, and we're just trying to support and trying to be safe in our beach.
One demonstrator holds a Mexican flag and a banner that reads, fed up with insecurity, corruption and bad government.
It attracted attention because it was an international issue. Maybe if it had been someone local, maybe not even the police would investigate. That's the reality.
Another protester, Rodrigo Montero, says he wants action from the government.
They go to a spot that we usually go to, and now we're afraid to go there, and right now it's like we are on the look of all the world because of this situation. It's very sad. So we want to ask our authorities and our government to give us a solution. We ask for security, we ask for justice for these persons.
Mexican authorities say they believe Perth brothers Jake and Callum Robinson and their American friend were shot dead by thieves who were trying to steal their car. Maria Elena Andrade Ramirez is the Baja California Attorney General.
It wasn't an attack as tourists. It was with the intention of stealing a vehicle. Surely they didn't know the origin of these people.
Three bodies recovered from a well in the area have been formally identified as the three missing tourists, who all died from a gunshot to the head.
According to the Attorney General, it appears that there was a dispute. They resisted being victims of the robbery, and that's when they were shot.
Salvador Rivera is a Fox 5 reporter in San Diego and has been covering the story.
The entire region is under the grip of these two drug cartels that are constantly fighting for control. And with it comes a lot of other side crime. A lot of bad people are in this part of the world working for the cartels. And so what happened to the Robinson brothers and their buddy from California, Jack, they were camping, surfing, as a lot of people do here, having a good time in all accounts when the men approach wanting to take their truck.
One man has been charged with an offence called forced disappearance, while his brother and another woman are also in custody. Salvador Rivera says more arrests are expected.
We were told this morning that there's still two people outstanding, two other suspects outstanding who are under investigation. So we should hear more about the charges, the official charges, and more likely murder here in the coming days.
Back at the demonstrations in Ensenada, Umberto Alonso is reflecting on the sad ordeal. He surfed with the Robinson brothers and their American friend Jack Carter Road the day before they were last seen.
We're very happy, you know. They're very excited by the Mexican culture, by the mariachi and all the singers, for the food. Just like a lot of people come here with the same mentality. And it's very sad that this situation.
The parents of Perth brothers Jake and Callum Robinson visited the morgue in Mexico a short time ago to identify the bodies.
Alison Shaw. Qantas has been slapped with a civil penalty of $100 million after admitting it sold fares for flights it had already decided to cancel. The remarkable admission that it misled travellers means the airline will also have to shell out another $20 million to compensate customers hurt by the cancellations. It's the latest move by Qantas to repair its battered reputation. Here's the ABC's senior business correspondent, Peter Ryan.
Last August, when the ACCC said it was taking Qantas to court, the airline vigorously denied claims it had sold tickets for flights that had already been cancelled. The ACCC initially flagged a potential fine of as much as $250 million. But today, a remarkable backdown by Qantas, admitting it had misled customers and will now agree to a $100 million civil penalty. In a major victory for ACCC Chair Gina Cass-Gottlieb.
This was egregious and unacceptable conduct by Qantas. Many Australian families and business travellers made plans after making bookings on phantom flights.
Part of the Qantas defence was that airlines can't guarantee specific flight times and that instead of buying tickets, customers were actually buying a bundle of rights. Gina Cass-Gottlieb says Qantas is no longer relying on fine print and technicalities, conceding it was critical to settle the case quickly.
They are no longer going forward to defend on that basis. They are accepting that and admitting that they misled customers.
In addition to the $100 million civil penalty, Qantas also has to shell out around $20 million to around 86,000 customers hurt by the cancellations, ranging between $225 for domestic passengers and $550 for international flyers, so all up $120 million. For Qantas Chief Executive Vanessa Hudson, it's an expensive message received.
We want to genuinely apologise to customers that were impacted, and we do recognise that we let them down.
Vanessa Hudson was landed with the ACCC's ghost flight allegations from former Chief Executive Alan Joyce, who controversially left the airline after 15 years. She says it's important the ACCC has dropped the fees for no service claims as part of the settlement. But she concedes the reputational damage control has a long way to run.
I think that this is really important for us to have settled with the ACCC, important to be able to compensate customers that were impacted, important to enable us to move forward in the work that we've been doing.
When you took over and started looking at all of this, did you say we need to turn this around, we need to settle, we need to drop this vigorous defence?
We've always maintained that there has been a damage to our reputation. And making the settlement today, we think, is a very important part in the step to regain trust and to rebuild reputation.
Qantas is also still negotiating compensation for 1,700 ground staff sacked at the height of the pandemic, action the High Court ruled as unlawful last year. Transport Workers Union National Secretary Michael Kane thinks Qantas got off lightly.
I mean, in what universe do you sell flights that are cancelled and then hold out for months and months and months before providing justice for passengers? You know, Qantas might have taken the easy road here, but it's taken them months and months to do it, and passengers have suffered. And it's the same with these Qantas families that have been illegally sacked.
The $100 million civil penalty now needs to be approved by the federal court. The ACCC wants it to be a deterrent for other companies thinking they can push the limits of Australian consumer law.
Peter Ryan. You're listening to The World Today. Thanks for your company. There's hope a plan to provide financial support for some university students will help combat what's known as placement poverty and address a chronic shortage of teachers, nurses, and social workers. The payment will help students with living expenses during compulsory placements. It's among the measures to be included in next week's federal budget, which the government is again framing as a cost of living budget amid ongoing inflation woes. Gavin Coote reports.
Australia is in desperate need of more teachers, nurses, and social workers. And for those hoping to take up these professions, the amount of unpaid work that's required during their studies can be a major barrier. The Education Minister is Jason Clare.
They've told me that often they've got to give up their part-time job in order to do their prac. Placement poverty is a real thing. So many students have told me that it's forced them to either drop out of their course or delay completing their degree.
University students studying teaching are required to do 16 weeks of unpaid practical experience. For nurses, it's 20 weeks and social workers, 26 weeks. Soon, these students will be eligible for a Commonwealth payment of $320 a week, which Jason Clare says will give them a better chance at completing their degrees and without being driven into poverty.
These are people who've signed up to do some of the most important jobs in this country. People who educate our kids, who look after us when we're sick or when we're old, who help provide support for women in domestic violence refuges.
The measure was recommended in a wide-ranging review of higher education. It'll be available from July next year. Andrew Norton is a professor in higher education policy at the Australian National University. He sees it as an important step in addressing placement poverty.
Look, it's probably not going to cover all their costs, depending on what they're earning in, say, a job they might have to leave to do the placement. And often placements are somewhere other than where you live, so you might have to travel, even stay in a hotel. So even though it's obviously going to be helpful, I think for some people it won't solve their problem.
The payment will be means-tested, something Unions New South Wales Secretary Mark Morey is worried about. He'd like students to be paid a minimum wage for the hours they're working.
If we want these young people to stay in education, we're going to have to step up and make sure we retain them. It's not a problem just endemic to university students. It's also the same problem with apprentices, plumbers, electricians. There's a real need for governments of all persuasions to be thinking long-term, how do we retain these young people? And that's what they've got to do. If we want a highly skilled country, we need to put the money in early to support them so they're there in the long-term.
The government yesterday also announced it would change the way debts on student loans are calculated. The measure, which will see indexation calculated on the lower figure of inflation or wage growth, is expected to wipe about $3 billion in student debt. Andrew Norton from ANU questions whether this will really help students when both rates of inflation and wage growth remain high.
Look, my suggestion is that we have a maximum amount. I suggested 4%, but it could be something else. But the core idea here is to make it so that when people are considering taking out a student loan or thinking about how long it'll take to repay, they know the worst case scenario is 4%, and in most years it'll be less. And I think that'll just give people more confidence about taking on the debt in the first place and be able to do their course, and in knowing, you know, how long it might take to repay their debt once they're in the workforce.
The federal budget will be handed down next Tuesday.
Gavin Coote. A community in Perth is coming to grips with the death of a teenager who was shot by police after an alleged stabbing on Saturday night. Police say the boy had been in a de-radicalisation program for 2 years and had mental health issues. So how do de-radicalisation programs work in Australia? And could more be done to prevent vulnerable people from extremist ideology in the first place? Elizabeth Cramsey has this report.
First came the alleged terrorist attack on a priest in Sydney, leaving a 16-year-old boy behind bars. Then in Perth on Saturday night, another 16-year-old boy was shot and killed by police after an alleged stabbing that investigators say has all the hallmarks of a terrorist attack, but is yet to be given the label. The boy had been part of a countering violent extremism program for 2 years. Dr. Clark Jones is a criminologist at ANU. He's also an expert on de-radicalisation.
Get a greater understanding of religious and cultural dimensions of those of a young person's needs, and also to re-examine more deeply mental health and some of those other things that may be driving problematic behaviour.
There's no one-size-fits-all approach, and Dr. Jones says there are lots of components to consider.
You know, how long do we, you know, monitor someone? How long do we work with someone? It's also how early do we get to that person? Do we allow it to run to the criminal justice system, or do we try and divert it a lot earlier?
He'd like to see more mental health support and resources.
But also in establishing proper mentoring and counselling and commitment in those areas. And that can take sometimes a real commitment from a mentor or a counsellor to stay with that individual and make sure they don't slip through the cracks.
He says the onus is often put on the religious community, but he'd like to see the focus shift to a broader view of the person.
A lot of the cases I worked in, religion is not the driver. There are other things that go on in a young person's life, such as, you know, struggling to find their own identity or feeling like they're attached to the broader Australian community. They're sort of lost in limbo between, you know, cultural expectations, sometimes religious expectations, and sometimes, you know, Australian cultural expectations.
Imam Wadud Janud is from the Nasser Mosque, the largest in Perth. He says people shouldn't be concerned with the effectiveness of the programs.
Because the program clearly identified this individual. The program was aware of this individual for the past couple of years, we understand about 2 to 3 years, and helping this individual who clearly had other issues outside of radicalization as well.
WA Premier Roger Cook also praised members of the local Muslim community for contacting police to raise their concerns. Imam Wadud Janud says more needs to be done outside de-radicalisation programs, and the whole community has a responsibility.
I think importance should be paid towards education and awareness. I think parents have a tremendous role to play in this.
While there's no perfect success rate, Western Australia's Police Minister, Paul Papalia, says police are doing all they can.
There is no solution as an alternative that people can take unless they commit an offence that you can then prosecute and apply the law over. It's just someone holding a view, and it's tough to change people's views.
The victim of Saturday's alleged stabbing is recovering in Royal Perth Hospital in a serious but stable condition.
Elizabeth Cramsey. They might be the largest animal to have ever lived, but blue whales are surprisingly tricky to locate in the oceans. Scientists from the Australian Antarctic Division wanted to get a snapshot of the whale's population in the Southern Ocean. So instead of looking for the whales, they decided to use underwater microphones to listen for their presence. Tom Melville reports.
8 months at sea across 7 voyages, covering tens of thousands of kilometres across the wild and remote Southern Ocean. The goal? To build a detailed, up-to-date snapshot of Antarctic blue whales, where they live and how the species is faring. Dr. Brian Miller from the Australian Antarctic Division says these simple questions are difficult to answer.
They're just not encountered that often from ships, but when we listen for them, we can hear them reliably and regularly.
Antarctic blue whales are the largest subspecies of blue whale. They're as long as 3 buses end-to-end and weigh as much as a Boeing 787. But despite their size, we know very little about them. There were once hundreds of thousands of them. That number fell to only a couple of hundred during the industrial whaling era. Researchers think the species has bounced back in recent years. There could be a few thousand in the wild now, but there's not enough data to know for sure. Dr. Brian Miller and his team are trying to close that knowledge gap.
Over the last 16 years, we've been listening for these animals to try to figure out where they are and whether or not they're continuing to recover after their near brush with extinction.
Blue whales make one of the loudest sounds in nature. Their calls regularly travel for hundreds of kilometres, the distance from Canberra to Sydney. And in certain circumstances, the sound can travel for thousands of kilometres. So Dr. Miller and his team deployed marine listening devices called sonobuoys all around Antarctica and sifted through thousands of hours of recordings. And this is some of what they heard. The Results, Dr. Miller says, show that, thankfully, Antarctic blue whales are still there.
And our results show that they're still distributed right around Antarctica. So they're animals that really, really get around, and we can't really understand them by just focusing on our backyard. We've got to go and work with other nations throughout the Southern Ocean to really understand where they are and start to get a handle on whether or not they're recovering.
And there are positive signs for the future of the species.
The trend is either neutral or going up over time. So that's really good news. Maybe they're getting louder, or maybe they're calling more frequently. Maybe this population is increasing, and that's why we're hearing them more often. And it's going to take a bit more work for us to be able to answer that conclusively.
It's knowledge that's becoming increasingly important as scientists track the growing impact of climate change. The world's oceans absorb the bulk of the warming generated by carbon emissions, and the Southern Ocean is warming faster than the average. Some scientists worry that could disrupt the relationship the largest animal in the ocean has with one of the smallest, krill, a crucial part of the whale's diet. Dr. Vanessa Perotta is a wildlife scientist from Macquarie University. She says krill are highly vulnerable to changes in the environment.
If we have reduced sea ice as a result of climate change, this may reduce their homes for Antarctic krill, which is not good news when you have growing or at least recovering whale populations like humpback whales and Antarctic blue whales that we need to preserve.
But Dr. Perotta is excited by the research from the Australian Antarctic Division because it forces us to think about this remote and wild part of the world.
It's so important for us to have this front of mind. And if it takes research like this for us to think about that bigger picture on how these giants are relying on so many of these tiny little creatures, which are in essence the base of the entire marine foods ecosystem, it's incredible.
Macquarie University wildlife scientist Dr. Vanessa Perotta, and some blue whales there ending that report by Tom Melville. A small soccer club is inching closer to a fairy tale finish this season after clinching some serious silverware overseas. The Central Coast Mariners took out the AFC Cup overnight after a tense final in Oman. The team travelled tens of thousands of kilometres to take part in the Asian tournament, all while competing in the A-League at home. Kathleen Ferguson reports.
In the 64th minute against Lebanese club champions Al Ahed, it was still nil all. But Alou Kwol was subbed on, and 20 minutes later, that decision paid dividends.
Kwol stretches, and Kwol has scored! 7 minutes left to play, and Alou Kwol has made the difference. What an important goal for the Central Coast Mariners.
It was a piece of individual brilliance from the 22-year-old that proved the difference.
Through the legs of Mustafa Matar. Alou time here at the Sultan Qaboos Stadium in Muscat, Oman.
The New South Wales-based team's first coach was in the crowd for the match. Laurie McInnes says the conditions were tough.
It was 36 degrees, it was a roasting hot night and a very, very tight game.
The team is walking away with more than $2 million in prize money, but Laurie McInnes says the effects of the win will also be felt back home.
It's huge for the Central Coast, huge for Australian football. But certainly this game was watched by millions and millions of people all over the world tonight, and again, Central Coast Mariners have put the Central Coast on the map.
He says for a small club with not a lot of money to spend on players, it's an inspiring feat.
19 years ago, you would have never imagined that Central Coast Mariners were the champions of the AFC. You'd have never guessed that.
Watching on in Australia, Mariners Foundation member Bob Brooks celebrated the win in the early hours of this morning.
When we won, I went outside on my deck at the front and shouted at the top of my voice, but I had warned all the neighbours that there might be some noise.
The Mariners won the A-League last year, and after finishing top of the table this season, the team is well placed to go back-to-back. The club's interim CEO, Adam Thompson, says the team's achievement can't be overstated.
The guys have been through thick and thin to get to where they did last night, and we got the result we wanted.
It's not been a glamorous road to the top. The team flew economy to all their games.
I think it was 103,000 kilometres, 21 flights, 15 cities, 10 countries, and at the same time playing our regular season A-League. So it's pretty remarkable what they've been able to achieve.
The triumph in Oman makes the Mariners the first Australian team to get silverware in Asia since Western Sydney won the Asia Champions League in 2014. Interim CEO Adam Thompson says the Mariners can now lay claim to being among Australia's top football clubs.
I would be up there. Certainly some big clubs at the top of the list in Sydney FC and Melbourne Victory and Wanderers at one stage, but certainly we're putting the steps in place to stake that claim.
The Mariners will take on Sydney FC this Friday in Sydney.
Kathleen Ferguson reporting. And that's all from the World Today team. Thanks for your company. I'm Rachel Mealy.
Hi, I'm Sam Hawley, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. You might remember an Alaska Airlines flight earlier this year when a hole opened up in the side of the plane. Ever since, the spotlight's been on Boeing, the maker of the aircraft. Today, Jerry Useem from The Atlantic magazine on how Boeing switched its focus to its stock price and what that meant for the safety of its planes. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.